record.
And then I clear my throat immediately. Good stuff.
Nice throat,
now
Billy.
I'll have the track signed up. Thank you. Thank you. So nice. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. You've thrown me off my game immediately.
That may have been my intention.
Throat goat. What?
Throat goat. Yeah.
I don't think that means what all of us think it means. I don't think.
It means exactly what I think it means.
I think it means what I think it means, too.
Sure. Okay, yeah. If there's one thing people know about me, it's that I'm definitely the throat goat.
Oh, baby. Let's go.
Oh, boy. Welcome to Nothing to Fear, a weekly horror movie podcast hosted by me, Billy Schultz, and also joined by two class clowns of the podcast industry. Every week, we watch a different horror movie, and we talk all about it. And this month for May, we are going through we're going through the top five most common phobias. And so we're gonna watch some movies around that. But before we do that, before we get into the movie of the week, I'd like to see how all of you are doing. Luke Mason joining us from British Columbia, Canada. How are you, sir?
Great. Weather's beautiful here. Finally nice. Outdoor frisbee has started. There's lots to do. I love it. I love spring in Nelson. It's so gorgeous here. And May and September are tied for my favorite months of the year. So
Let's go. So now, longtime listeners of the show and dedicated listeners of the show will, of course, heard no gap. But we took a week off. We didn't record last week. So what did you get up to on your podcast break?
Just relaxing. Took a weekend off.
Just so relaxing. Yeah, yeah, nothing.
Spent all in the pool. Just in a pool the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
No, it was my sister's wedding in Calgary, so that was fun.
Oh, you went to Calgary.
I did. It was a busy trip. Lots to do. Yeah. I kind of just became Joelle's bitch when I got there, but that's okay. That's part of the job.
Right. Because no, you were master of ceremonies?
I was master of ceremonies, but also I was like one of the chief commodity relocation technicians for all the stuff that they had for the venue.
Chief commodity relocation technicians.
Yeah.
No stranger to useless executive titles.
That's right. So, you know, just
that's a fancy way of saying bitch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fine. I enjoyed it a lot. They planned a great wedding. It was executed pretty flawlessly, I thought. It was a lot of fun.
Excellent. We always love to hear that. Wedding that doesn't have any major like technology or weather fuck ups or whatever.
Everyone forever held their peace.
Oh, sweet. Nobody spoke out again. That means that she's married for reals.
For reals, yeah.
Taylor Swift didn't crash the wedding or anything?
No. I didn't see any Vince Vaughn or Owen Wilson types there. But if I did, I definitely would have partied with them.
Yeah. I can see you partying with the Vince Vaughns of the Wedding Crasher ilk. Mm-hmm. Well, good. I'm glad that it went well, and I'm sure your speech was suitably received, either with groans or laughs, as you desired.
No.
Excellent. And, of course, the other voice that you're hearing is Alex Wan. How are you, Alex? How did you spend your pod break?
I went to Vancouver, so that was nice. What else did I do? Actually, no, that's not true. I didn't spend my pod break in Vancouver. I spent my pod break back in Calgary, because I was already back in Calgary on the Sunday, which is when we were recording. So really, nothing was different.
Ah.
Yeah.
Just hung out, got a coffee. Yeah. What was in Vancouver?
I went to go see a show, and then it was supposed to be on Thursday, so I get there Thursday, and then the show gets canceled.
Oh.
And then so I just hung out with my friend and ate good food. The sushi there is really good.
I hear they do a good sushi over there.
And it's like, it's so much cheaper, you know? It's cheaper.
The sushi or Vancouver?
Not Vancouver.
Like, the Vancouver sushi is so much cheaper. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Like, I was stuffed, and we each paid, like, maybe $38 with tips.
Oh, dang.
And then here, it's, like, the same amount for shittier food. It would be, like, minimum 50.
Well, they got unbelievable. They don't have to send it as far
yes.
to get there.
I guess not.
But yeah, well, I'm sorry your show got canceled.
That's fine.
And I'm glad you were able to salvage the trip and have fun anyway. I love Vancouver. Vancouver's a cool hangout place anyway. As for myself, I'm doing well. Last week, instead of recording, Kelly and I took a drive in a very rainy Sunday, but we drove to, I'm going to say it badly, but it's Trois-Rivières, basically. Yeah, Three Rivers is a little city off of the island of Montreal, more into the like mainland of Quebec. And that was kind of cool. It was too rainy to really do anything, but it was a fun little drive along some like swampy marshlands, and we saw some beavers and some herons and just like cool wildlife hanging out in the rain. So that was fun. And
excellent.
Yeah.
Beaver goat.
Sorry?
Nothing.
Stop that.
Oh yeah, beaver goats. I love beaver goats.
Didn't have the intended effect, you know.
Yeah. Well, I would say that this conversation with the interruptions has been the scariest thing that's happened to me all week, but actually kind of fitting in possibly later on in the month for Phobia Month, I had a scare doing laundry yesterday where I went into the laundry room like I normally do into our basement, and I felt like something brushed my neck, and I thought it was just my hair. So I moved it, and then I felt it continue moving on my neck, and a spider had like fallen from the ceiling into my whole hair and neck region. And there was a good minute and a half of me frantically brushing off every part of my body, setting fire to the entire apartment building as you would, and just sort of like fleeing for my life, because I'm not as scared of spiders as I used to be when I was much younger, but I don't like them when they're touching me. Like, don't touch me. I don't like it. It's gross.
So is that one of your phobias?
I would say of the common phobias, spiders is right up there. Growing up at, you know, going to the lake a lot in the country, there's lots of spiders that made their way into the house, and I don't like them. I appreciate that they're very beneficial and they pest control and they're good, and if they're outside and they're doing their thing, cool. If you're inside and I can get you out without killing you, also cool. But if you touch me, it's friends off, spider. It's not happening. We have an uneasy alliance, I would say. Me and the spider folk.
Like the men and the elves.
Yeah, like the men and the elves. Exactly. That's the best way. But that was sort of my rundown. At the time of recording, I have a day before my last final exam, which is tomorrow morning. So if you're listening to this in the morning when it comes out, send me some good vibes for my test that I'm probably writing. And if you're listening after the fact, then I appreciate the retroactive good vibes. But yeah, one more final and then I'm done. Well, not done. I have a project I have to work on that I got a deferral for, but almost done this semester. And I can't wait. I'm so done studying and revising and being stressed about taking an exam. I just want to be over it.
So soon.
I'm sure you'll be okay at it. Is that good vibes?
Thank you. That was the best. That was the best. Could you call me the goat one more time? Like the test taking goat?
No, I think that would be too... That's taking it way too far.
Okay.
Fine. Do you think you're the test taking goat, Billy?
Sure. Why not? Yeah. So that's my life. And
it's now or never.
I'm not going to live forever.
You just got to live while you're alive, Billy.
Yeah. Of course. Of course. All right. Let's talk about some movie news of the week, because we've had a big break of time, and there's a couple of things for movie news that I thought that was interesting. Mostly things getting trailers and titles that I want to get your reaction on. So did either of you watch the Insidious The Red Door trailer that came out this week or a couple weeks ago? Yeah, Luke, you're nodding. What'd you think?
No.
I did.
Alex, you're shaking your head.
Honestly, the trailer is probably exactly what I thought it would have been. You know?
Right.
It was shots of the it's a little cast. Bit it's a little bit disarming to see a grown up long haired Ty Simpkins. But
I know.
Other than that, it's like Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne look like a little different from the originals, but not that different, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad they're all I'm glad the gang's back together. And I love the I love the contrivances that these movies do to shoehorn in characters who are dead. you know, like now that there's a recording of Elise talking about whatever is going to happen in this movie.
Oh, and 100% they're going to meet up in the further and like high five each other or whatever. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. It's just like, you know, all the different ways that they kept getting Jigsaw back in the Saw movies after he died, you know, it's just so great.
they always find a tape or they uncover a recording or there's a painting or something.
Well, I mean, they do it in Scream 3 as well, right? There's a recording of Randy. All these characters know that there's going to be sequels to these franchises, so they make a recording just in case.
Right. Just in case. They're just ready for it. I can't remember. Did they have a recording of Randy for 5 Cream? Or was it just like the fact that Mindy and Chad were
It was just Mindy and Chad knew him.
I wouldn't have been surprised if they were like, we also found this VHS tape where it's Randy, just in case my kids have to deal with it or my niece and nephew have to deal with it.
Exactly.
With Jamie Kennedy. But then
who's Randy again?
Him. He was the Jamie Kennedy character in Scream.
He's the meta commentary guy.
Yeah. He was like, the rules of the scary movie. Don't go outside. Don't.
Oh, that fucker? Okay.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, great character.
Yeah. He survived Scream 1 only to be killed in Scream 2 by being dragged into a van in broad daylight.
I do remember that.
And also, back to Insidious, this is Patrick Wilson's kick at the can at directing first time. So that's kind of cool.
Nice.
I think. Mr. Director.
And Alex, you didn't watch it? Didn't watch the trailer?
No, I haven't seen it yet, but I could.
You could? You can watch it right now?
It is possible.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The fact that they had little snippets of Lipstick Face Demon, obviously he's back, and it's going to involve Ty Simpkins, Dalton dealing with his trauma about it. Looks like, from what I remember, maybe the relationship between Patrick Wilson and his kids has decayed a little bit as a result of these.
Well, it also, it looks like they've both kind of gone through that same, I don't know, hypnotherapy that Josh did when he was little to forget. The further to forget like they talk about that a bit in the trailer, that Josh doesn't remember these things and apparently Dalton doesn't either. And now they're starting to remember them again.
And that's because Dalton is going to fancy art school where they're like, paint your feelings. And he's like, what if I painted a demon? And then they're like, oh, no,
keep painting this red door.
Yeah.
So that's actually what happens.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's kind of what the trailer was starting out as. Yeah.
Yeah. Like what you said in the group chat, Insidious goes to college.
It's Insidious goes to college. Mr. College student, yeah. Insidious boy. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm sure there'll be a lipstick face demon. There'll be a guy in a trench coat. There'll probably be Tucker and Specs will probably. I think there's a shot in the trailer where you can see them in the background. So they'll.
Oh, they'll definitely be there.
They'll be around.
I'm pretty sure Lee Winnell can make time for his own franchise.
I hope so. I hope they're like, guess what? We have this Elise tape. We're going to show it to you. And that's how they find the tape in the first place is because of...
You have to imagine how much money Lee Winnell has made in his life because of the Insidious franchise. I mean, all of these movies have done remarkably well.
At least dozens of dollars, right?
Right.
How much could it cost? $10?
So I think he'll make time.
I hope he makes time. There's one story I saw speaking with of Lee Winnell, kind of his franchises. I clicked on the link and then I unclicked it, not to talk about it, but it was like, oh, the logo reveal for Saw X is out there and fans are talking about it. And it's literally just the word Saw with an X by it. And so it's like, I don't know how many fans are talking about this.
Time to make a 15-minute YouTube video breaking right? it down.
Well, and I just saw the trailer for Fast and Furious 10, and it's just Fast X.
Fast X.
So
I think they need to.
You're gonna make the same joke I was, so I'll let you do it.
Okay. Well, we'll see. They should have absolutely called it Fast 10. Your seatbelts. I don't know why they didn't do that.
Not the same joke. I was gonna say they gotta make 20 more of these so that they can have the crossover of Fast Triple X.
Oh yeah.
With Vin Diesel in there.
Don't give Vin Diesel ideas.
The twist is that he's both Dom Toretto and Xander Cage.
Oh, yeah, twins, because in, what was it, Fast 9, it's like John Cena turns out to be their brother.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, baby brother Jacob Toretto. Yeah.
Jacob
I watched
Toretto.
It was terrible.
You watched it. It's not, apparently, it's like, what, 5 and 7 and 8 are the best ones, and then the rest are kind of meh.
5 is great. 5 is
liked,
really good. That's
honestly,
the one where they go to Brazil.
I liked the first one, just because it started the franchise, and it's kind of nostalgic that way, I'd say.
If we are being real, the best one, like, there's no question about it, is Tokyo Drift.
Okay, I guess so, yeah.
I don't think I've seen that one.
You haven't seen Tokyo Drift? That's the best one, so. Luke. You should watch it.
I've heard it's good. See, I've only seen the first Fast and Furious, and I saw number 5 because people are saying that's when it gets good, but I didn't really have the context of it before. And the only reason I still remember seeing the Fast and the Furious was because that was the very first movie that I saw in a friend's basement where I spent most of the time making out with somebody. Mm-hmm. So like that, it holds that sort of significance in my mind. But as for the plot, I don't know. I don't remember. I was focused on other things. Yes. How do we get on Fast 10? Yeah. Vin Diesel. Let's get him. Let's have him be secret twins where Xander Cage was also Dominic. His like real name is Xander Cage Toretto.
Yeah.
They're part of family.
Fast Triple X.
Okay. Fast Triple X. You know what? Why not? They're making multiples of all these other movies, including the next sequel to Conjuring is being developed. Conjuring 4 has got a title called The Last Rites with Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. So they're going to be doing some 80s charlatanism and leaving their daughter alone for extended period of time. So, you know, can't wait for that. And, you know, The Exorcist is getting a sequel later this year or early next year with David Gordon Green behind it, who did the new, like, Halloween movies. And Ellen Burstyn is confirmed to reprise her role as Chris in that movie. So, like, it's sequels forever. There's no more original movies, folks. That's it. It's all sequels and Marvel movies and canceled Star Wars movies. Like, that's all it's going to be.
They cancel the Star Wars movie?
They cancel every fucking Star Wars movie. Every like, couple weeks, they're always like, oh, big announcement from Disney and Star Wars. This guy's making a movie that's set a million years in the past, and this guy's doing another Star Wars movie, and then, like, 2 weeks after it, they're like, well, that we lost this director, or this project is stalled, or we're canceling it, and it's like, okay.
You know what? I'll say it. Good.
You good? I think so. I think I
agree with
you.
That video of that guy, of that kid, like, saying, like, you know what? I'm going to say it. I don't care that you broke your arm.
I don't know that video.
It's pretty funny. I'll link it later.
Okay, sounds good. But I mean, seriously, with the Star Wars universe, like, I think there is simply too much. There's way too much of it. And I think what a lot of people really built up the fandom, like the people that are our age, is because it was like, it happened when it happened. And then people saw it on VHS or limited releases or thought about it, and that was all you got for Star Wars content. And now it's just like every 2 months they're like, remember this character? Here's a show about them. Remember this guy? He's got a movie. Remember this guy? Shorts or something. And you're just like, oh boy, you can't keep up with it.
It's a lot.
And
it's a lot.
Star Wars was originally intended as a mythos, not as a detailed, plot-driven, actual world to be embodied by all the characters. So there's a kind of, I think there's a subconscious disconnect between what it started as and what it is now.
Yeah, whereas like you can kind of fill in the blanks that satisfy you and is fun. And whereas they're like, oh, we're going to tell you every day leading up to the Battle of Yavin, so it's solidified and you know exactly what happened at all those points in time, and there's no more deviation.
As soon as you start trying to like make sense and fill in the gaps and the details of Star Wars, you've, as it were, lost the plot. Like, it's just, it makes it absurd. It just makes it absurd. And this isn't new. Like, George Lucas in the prequels made a lot of the original trilogy absurd by his plot decisions, too. So his hands are not clean of this. But
sure did.
Just,
yeah.
You know, if George Lucas was a tennis player in his late career, he would lose on unforced errors alone.
Yeah. All right. I have a couple other things I wanted to talk about before we get into the movie. Maybe I'll just pick this last one. Okay, so Stranger Things news. This is kind of tangentially related to Stranger Things news. I learned recently that apparently they're making a sequel to Gladiator, and that Stranger Things, Eddie Munson, the guy who played Eddie Munson, is going to be in that movie. That's really the only reason. But I know, Luke, that Gladiator is one of your favorite movies of all time, and I wanted to get your temperature on what you think a sequel could be or is or why or how do they do a sequel to Gladiator.
Well, I mean, I hope they've perfected Resurrection so they can get Russell Crowe back. Spoilers for Gladiator, I guess.
He's in the fields of Elysium, touching that wheat.
I mean, whatever. They're making sequels of everything else. It's not like... I feel about it the same way I feel about Star Wars. It's like, some of the new movies are fine. Some of them suck really bad. And none of that changes how I feel about the originals. You know? I mean, and... If the prequels can not change the way I feel about the original trilogy, then I don't think Gladiator 2 could possibly do anything to make me change my opinion about the first one.
Fair enough.
There's also something kind of, there's something awesome about like 98 to 2003 films. Like that was just the era where directors were swinging big at everything. Like studios were like, let's just make epic films all the time. You know?
Let's just go
from
for
like,
it.
Bookended from like Armageddon to... I don't know, like something, there's just these, like
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, right? Like in that like 5-year period almost, there were dozens of these just sweeping epics, like The Patriot or I guess Waterworld was a bit before that. But you know what I mean? Like there was like almost a decade, I guess, of just these, fuck it, we're going to go epic the whole time. And Gladiator.
What's your favorite epic movie?
Gladiator, well.
Is it Gladiator?
No, I mean, I think the Lord of the Rings, the three of them together as one story would be. But Gladiator is, as a standalone, I think it's right up there. It's just fun. Mm-hmm. It's just so, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's frenetic. It's got a cool story. I haven't watched it in a while, but it's still, the fact that it's still being talked about when there's so many movies that don't get talked about from history is like, that stands
well,
to reason.
I think also it's got one of the best... like a top 10 all-time villain. You know, Joaquin Phoenix's Commodus is one of the best villains ever in cinema, I think.
Oh, he's so bad, yeah.
What a bad boy. He's so bad. He's so bad.
You just hate him.
How do you feel about Gladiator, Alex?
I think I've seen it like twice in my life. It was fine. It's a good movie. I also enjoy the epics every so often.
Yeah, what's your favorite epic?
So my favorite epic is probably... it's Kingdom of Heaven, but the director's cut.
I've heard that's the good one to watch.
Yeah. So, great movie. But the thing about epics is that's what they are. They're epics. So, they're like 2.5 to 3 hours long minimum. And I don't have the attention span or the, you know, just the stalwartness to watch them anymore. Is that a word?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Like, if you see a runtime that's 2.5 hours plus and it's like... oh, boy.
Yeah, right? It's just makes me want to watch it less, even though I know it's a good movie, you know?
Where it's especially like a movie that you've already seen, even if you like it, it's like, I like it, but do I like it 3 hours of my day?
I don't know.
Exactly.
I have to say, Alex, when I saw the movie that we're talking about, not today when you're hearing this, but today for us, I was like, 2 hours? Come on, Alex.
Nah, my bad.
I will admit, I may have uttered a similar sentence. but we can get into that. We can get into that. And I think we should. This is a good segue. So May, I decided that we should try a theme of common phobias and find a list of the top 5 common phobias, number 5 being fear of dogs. And so that led me to Stephen King's Cujo. A movie that has been in the ether. It's been out 40 years. It came in 1983. So it's been around. And I feel like this is one that I'm a little bit surprised we haven't done yet. And also has been referenced 1,000,001 times in other bits of pop culture. Or anytime a dog is a little bit scary, they're called like a Cujo dog. And so that's why I picked it. And yeah, what did you know about this movie, Luke?
Just that it was a Stephen King novel about a big angry dog. And I think they reference it in The Sandlot. I'm pretty sure they say the word Cujo in The Sandlot about the big dog that, or the big dog behind the fence.
The beast.
In The Sandlot. Yeah, the Beast. I think that there's a... I can't remember. It's been a while since I've seen The Sandlot, but I feel like there's a reference to Cujo in that movie. But more importantly, Cujo reminds me of the 90s and 2000s NHL goalie Curtis Joseph, because Cujo was his nickname. So it made me think of a potential future trivia category of they share the nickname, whereas like you give the example of two different entities in culture and you have to think of what their common nickname is. So that would be a good trivia category, I think.
Well, there you go, Luke. So that's this podcast is paying off big time.
Already a success. Categories.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. What about you, Alex? Did you know anything about Cujo?
Yeah, I knew it was the Stephen King story about a dog, but that's it.
Yeah. I remember someone described it to me once as, what if Old Yeller was really extra sad and more traumatizing? And
this movie was not sadder than Old Yeller.
It was not
Old Yeller
than
sad?
Old Yeller.
Yeah.
Yeah, Old Yeller was so sad.
What's Old Yeller about? Is that the one where he gets hit by a car?
No. Old Yeller is like a Disney movie where this like dog is this boy's best friend, and then he gets rabies, and the boy has to, like, the kid who raised him has to like shoot him, and it's like, oh, it's so heartbreaking. And it's
Boo fucking who, kid? Everybody dies.
Alex, heartless Alex. Yeah.
Old Yeller makes Marley and Me look like a romp in the park.
Yeah, it's a sad dog movie.
Wait, Marley and Me was sad? Isn't that a Christmas movie?
No, the dog. What? Have you seen Marley and Me?
Yeah, one with the big nose guy.
Yeah, Owen Wilson.
I would say one Jennifer of the biggest Aniston. Nothing to fear phobias is, does the dog die?
Yes. And oh boy. Oh boy. So this movie, we'll save it for the trailer and stuff, but this was a watch. I can't wait to talk about it. So yeah, speaking of doesthedogdie.com, well, yes, he does. This is a very, there's like a lot of kids in peril. There's a lot of like, I feel like the stakes are pretty high in this movie. There's a lot of screaming and barking. So if that sets you off, go in so armed. I will try to dampen whatever sounds are in the trailer to be sort of in line with the podcast. But this movie is about a dog that gets rabies and then what happens as a result of it. So all of those sort of trigger warnings attached therein. Let's go into the trailer and let's talk about Cujo.
Nothing that lives in the imagination is more frightening than the terror that lives in Castle Rock, Maine.
Cujo?
Cujo?
Can he get us in here?
My God, I'm losing my baby.
From the novel by Stephen King, creator of Carrie and The Shining, comes a startling vision of fear.
Please, God, get me out of here.
Now there's a new name for terror. Cujo.
Cujo is a 1983 American horror film based on Stephen King's 1981 novel of the same name and directed by Louis Teague. The film follows a mother and her son who are trapped inside their car while protecting themselves from a rabid Saint Bernard.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I knew this was a story about a dog that got rabies and that it was Stephen King, so it would be like spooky and scary. But oh my gosh, this has got to be one of the saddest movies that I think we've watched for Nothing to Fear, in my own opinion. I really felt a lot of emotions while this movie was happening. And for being a 1983 movie with all the pitfalls therein of Stephen King, I thought they navigated them pretty well. And I can see why it's stuck around in pop culture for lo these four decades. To get into it. So, Luke, what were your first thoughts on Cujo, the dog that got rabies?
Full title. This is like if Beethoven actually was what the bad guys in Beethoven said Beethoven was.
Okay.
because those Beethoven movies were pretty fun as a kid. I liked them a lot, and that was also Saint Bernard.
Big 90s vibes.
I mean, I think there's nothing like particularly awful about this film, but it was just kind of underwhelming for me. The offensive part was the jump cut edits. I just found the editing of this film to be similar to Pet Sematary, where I was just like, oh my God, this is so stupid. It's like, it outrages your intuitive physics again. But I mean, it wasn't horrible. It was different for Stephen King in that there wasn't a supernatural villain in this one, which I thought was, I mean, that's pretty rare for a Stephen King story. I mean, obviously, it becomes a little bit more believable in that it's a St. Bernard versus like a terrier, you know, to be able to. But I guess maybe I don't know enough about rabies, but like, do rabies make animals like charge headlong at metal? Like, and I feel like that, and makes them like, does rabies make organic flesh impervious to blunt force trauma? I guess it must, because this movie would suggest it does. And so, super rabies. Yeah, super rabies. But honestly, like, this movie, I kind of already forget most of it. So.
All right. I actually fell down a little bit of a rabies research hole while this movie was going on, because I was curious, and like, I don't know how to answer the questions, does it make them charge headlong at metal or be impervious to blunt force trauma? The research I found didn't dig that up, but apparently the portrayal was pretty accurate in terms of like the foaming and the like the eye goobies and pus and stuff. And like, I've always known rabies was like came with like a phobia of water. Like, dogs, animals that have it would like be afraid of running water for some reason. But also, I didn't realize that like the like sounds can be really triggering if you have rabies. Like, they can be really sensitive to sound. So when Cujo was reacting to like the phone ringing, or you know, anytime somebody was like screaming or whatever, and it's just like setting them off more and more and more, I that apparently is in line with how the virus affects people. And
it seems strange to me that the guy, the owner, who clearly like knew enough to know a dog could get rabies, didn't get his dog that lives on a farm a rabies shot.
I mean, that was bizarre. We'll talk about Joe Camber's character in a little bit, but I don't find that to be very out of his portrayal of character.
Well, other than he knew like as soon as he saw Cujo, he's like, oh, he's rabid. So it's like, well, you know, it could be rabies. So like, why the fuck didn't you get him a rabies shot before?
Well, because the 80s. Yeah. But anyway, one other thing that you mentioned about the Beethoven movies. I read an article on Screen Rant about this, about the dogs in Cujo, because they had five different St. Bernards that played Cujo during the filming, which you can tell if you look at them, they have very different faces at different points during the movie. But the dog trainer was named Carl Miller. And off the back of this, in 1983, he got renowned for training St. Bernards, which had been historically hard to train. And he worked on training the dogs for Beethoven. So, you know, he's the best in the business. But Alex Wan, what's your first impressions of Cujo?
This was like, I had no problem with Cujo. It just felt like, of all the stories that you can write about and then make a movie about, why this one? It's just like, it was the most uneventful, kind of boring story. A dog has rabies. That was it. And I was kind of bored of it. And constant screaming of the kid was very annoying. Did not like that.
Pretty rough for old Tad. A rough go.
So, yeah, it was like, in the universe of Stephen King adaptations, this continues the trend of them not being very good.
Which makes it even more hilarious that Stephen King had such an issue with The Shining.
It's true. See, I think that maybe this just hit me in the exact right mood to watch it, but I felt like this sort of plot around something so mundane and like the oh my God, what's the word I'm trying to look for? The like serendipity when two things like meet. Coincidences? I don't know. The way the events stacked up in this movie to like build this very tense and scary situation was really interesting, because like everything on its own that happened in this movie was like a problem, but just like the random calculus of them joining up together made it even more. Like the dog having rabies is but one part of this movie, because there is a huge like plot line of this family at the center where there's infidelity and domestic struggle between the married couple, and the fact that the wife has like been sleeping with a friend of the family or whatever, sleeping with somebody else, leads the dad to be betrayed and hurt. And so as a result, he doesn't get the car fixed. And because the car isn't fixed, she takes it to the farm where they were getting the car service where Cujo was. And so it was all just like these things that like on their own wouldn't have been a problem, but just the like perfect storm of them all meeting was the tension of the movie. And I think that, yeah, that sounds like a mundane event, but it just goes to show you that real life can be like scary if like things line up in a certain way. I thought that was an interesting take, and it kept me interested enough while the movie was going on.
Nice.
Cool.
I didn't hate this movie. I thought that the characters were not bad. Dee Wallace did a good job. I really believe that she was trying to protect her son from this monster. I thought Tad, even though he did have most of his lines were screams, I thought he was a pretty cute kid as far as 80s child actors go. And I really felt his fear. He's played as very anxious. He's worried about monsters in the bed every night, and his parents are constantly reassuring him, especially Dad, constantly reassuring him, there's no monsters, you can't get in here, he's got the words. And then he like just happens to be in a car with his mom when like the scariest thing in his life ever happens to him, and just like, oh, this kid is so traumatized forever after this because of being locked in a car for 3 days while a rabid dog is out there and you can't get out and your mom is hurt and there's no water and no food. Like, it's just, I thought it was a very scary survival situation, which, you know, we haven't really done too much, you know. And I thought, Luke, that you would maybe like it. I don't know really how you like it or not, but I thought you would be more interested in the fact that like survival is something that's happening because, you know, a lot of times your like supernatural stuff isn't real. But this was all very grounded in reality for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. Except that, I mean, and this is not the only movie that this is the culprit of, but the charitable interpretation is serendipity. The word I might be more inclined to use is tropes. There are just so many things that happen in this movie that I've seen in 100 other movies of like the beats and the plot point. As soon as they drove to that place, a mile away, literally a mile away, it's like, car's not going to start when they got to leave.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck saw that coming? Well, I did, you know? And so when things like that happen in movies, it really does take the suspense and tension out of it for me. Okay, once the thing is dead and the dog's around, where's the dog? Oh, it's right there. I don't know. Cujo just always showed up when it was the most tense for the movie for Cujo to show up. And all of the shit, like that Steve guy shows up at the house when it's just the perfect moment for it to be the most tense for Steve to show up at that house. You know, and it's like this race against the clock of the guy, Vic. It's like, well, my family's not answering the phone, so I gotta get back just in time. But no, Donna was the hero after all.
Donna was the hero after all.
So I think all of the kind of like narrative superstructure of this movie was like about as lazy as it gets. And I don't know if the book was like that. I think the book was probably more tense, I would imagine, because Stephen King is actually a really great writer, I think. So, yeah, I mean, the survival situation. And Tad, yeah, like the idea of a kid being fearful of the things in the world that are kind of beyond his or her comprehension in an exact sense is that's a interesting idea. I guess, more than anything, this movie like screams the advertisement of the era it was made in, because the dialogue was so stupid and the scream, like, I don't know, the editing was unrealistic and everything just happened right when the movie needed it to. There was no there were no surprises. There wasn't a single time in this movie where I was surprised at something that happened. Like,
oh, really?
Honestly, if you had said to me before this movie started, what do you think will happen in this movie, I would have said this. So it just nothing caught me off guard. So yeah, like the survivalist, I don't know, I guess all I can really say is like, it's a trope. It's a thing I like. I just wish it was made a better movie.
Which like all. I tried to look around and this one actually has not been remade, which feels surprising and feels inevitable at this point. Mm-hmm. But there hasn't been a Cujo sequel or something.
I feel like it hasn't been remade because it's like kind of just a boring plot, you know. Like, think about what happens in this movie. Like, it's it's something that would have happened to any family, right?
Yeah.
Your parents are going through trouble, and you're scared of dogs, and there's a crazy dog that attacks you because it has rabies.
Like, it is arguably Stephen King's least complicated book.
Yeah, so that, like, that's the thing. I'm right. Not saying, like, we can't, like, stories about real world things and reality and all that are necessarily boring or, like, shouldn't be told, but it's just like this was in a world where it's so hard to keep someone's attention, why would you make a movie that has this plot?
Well, and it might not land the same with people who don't have the phobias.
Oh, sure.
Right? Like, yeah. I was very surprised to find out that a top five phobia was that of dogs. It's like, I would have guessed more as a top five philia, you know? And so,
fair enough.
So a rabid dog just definitely doesn't make me scared beyond the, like, okay, well, we gotta, like, it is, yeah, your hair prickles up. But it's not horror. It's just fear.
Mm. See, it's funny because, like, I agree with what you're saying, but, like, well, this hit me in such a way that I was like, oh shit, yeah, it is so low stakes. It is so mundane. It could happen to anybody. It could be a plot line that anyone experiences. And that made it more tense and more frightful for me because it's like, oh yeah, like, rabies is a real thing. If you have a dog, your dog could get rabies and that could be really bad. And so it felt like the scary part of this dog was more relatable than any of the, like, possessions or demons or whatever's, because it's like, you know, there's a sense of being like, oh well, I wouldn't pick up the cursed amulet, or I wouldn't go into the haunted church, or I wouldn't go, you know, I wouldn't do that, so I wouldn't be in that situation. But, like, you can't really control where a rabid dog is around you necessarily. If you're outside, you can if you're, like, inside or whatever, but, like, if you're out in the wild, this is a thing that exists in the wild. It's a small chance, but it's not zero, that it would be an encounter you run into. And I think that for me it made the plot more intense and more scary.
Thinking about it a bit more in the abstract, I agree with you, because yeah, rabid dog is something to actually be scared of, but this movie just ham-fisted it so hard up our ass that it just felt unrealistic. Like, I just, sure. Okay, so I imagine a rabid dog, this is like a 30-second encounter where I either make it or I don't, you know? Not right. Like a 3 day stuck in the car. Like, what the fuck? What the fuck does he eat for 3 days to keep up his energy?
Two whole grown people, plus a big trough full of kibble. So maybe he ate that.
Okay, well, fair enough. But, like, well, if he's scared of water, what does he drink? What do rabid dogs drink if they're scared of water? Yeah. Like, you know, it's just like, yeah, I get rabies gives you, like, this kind of furor and energy, but he just smells them all the time and doesn't leave, and that's it.
Yeah,
I mean. Okay, I don't know. Like, that was a farm. At some point, Donna is going to get an avenue and at least be able to get, like, a shovel or a pickaxe from that barn, if not, like, a chainsaw. Like,
it was Maine. It wasn't Texas.
I guess what was unrealistic to me is, like, over the long period of time, like, after the surprise is over, a human not being able to beat a dog, even a rabid dog, especially with all those tools available to her, it's just like, okay, this movie is making it. I just, once you like have to put yourself in the situation, if I was Donna, I'd be like, I feel like this is a pretty easy survivable situation.
Sure.
That's all. So it's the specificity of it just didn't land with me, even if the abstract does.
Yeah, because it was so specific. And I felt, though, that, like, specifically in Donna's case, like, because she has all this guilt from carrying on an extramarital affair that is clouding her judgment, and she feels really guilty about it. She, like, fesses up right before her husband has to leave for this big serial problem that he's working on, because there's that plot line in this movie. And just, like, I could feel that, like, she is 100% blaming herself for the situation that she's in, and that taking its toll on her psychologically and then sort of depleting her ability to think rationally or act in a way that would,
maybe she shouldn't cheat,
be productive. You gotta have conversations about extramarital stuff with your partners.
I guess I just can't relate to that in a survival situation. It's like, to me, all of that would melt away if it's your, like, primary fight or flight, live or die. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm about to die, but I really just can't stop thinking about my guilt. It's like, really?
I'm just dwelling on it. Yeah, no, that's fair. You make a good point that way. Yeah, I and I think also the the rabies angle of it was hard for me because the dog at the start of the movie, and you see him interacting before the rabies sets in, it just, I'm a big softie for dogs. He looks like such a good dog. I felt so bad for Cujo. Watching like an animal succumb to rabies is just like, oh no, Cujo's not bad. Cujo's just in a bad situation. He's not a bad dog. Like I read a thing when I was doing like after research on this movie, and there was a poll that somebody went up that was like, who's a worse animal in Stephen King? Is it Cujo or is it Church? And Church, for refreshment, was the cat from Pet Sematary who was killed and then comes back. And to me, it's like, well, the cat was worse because it was a magical resurrection, came back wrong. But like Cujo was just this dog that didn't want to get bitten, get rabies, and can't help it. And I just felt so bad.
It's always the bats, hey? It's always the bats.
Fucking bats and rabbits. What are these rabbits hanging out in a condo with bats anyway? That rabbit should have had rabies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I just felt really bad that like Cujo is this mean, scary dog, and my heart went out to the little guy because it's like, oh, you're not really that bad, but you can't control it. You have a virus. You're like a zombie. I guess that's, you know, the whole point with zombies is like they're not the people anymore. They're this other thing. I feel like I'm real positive on this very sad movie, and it's weird to be in that seat. I'm usually more negative. Let's talk about the family dynamics, which maybe also wasn't that interesting, but I, for one, was surprised that we had actually kind of like a really good dad in a horror movie in this one. I'm ready for an 80s movie to have like a crap dad, and Vic, he was great. Like, he was really good with Tad, really patient. And then, like, I really felt his betrayal at what his wife was doing with his friend. So, You know, there's a good dad. There are good dads in horror movies, and we found one. So, yeah. What do we think about Vic?
He was probably the best part of this movie.
Continue. Go on. Say more.
He was a good character, and I was really rooting for the guy.
Did you want him to get his serial contract sorted out?
Yes. Yes, I did.
The serial angle was so stupid. That was so stupid. Because it's like, oh.
We need a reason for him to not be here.
They're bleeding. It's like, oh, yeah, probably blood. Maybe not like the fountains of red food dye going into this.
Gotta love the 1980s. I guess.
I just fucking hate that shit in movies. Not just movies. I hate it in books. I hate it in any sort of like this kind of faux surprise at this thing that is like so transparently what happened, but it's like, no, it must be blood. It must be, it's like, okay, fine. There's probably some troglodytes who like, oh, that must be blood. And then you find it out. But then as soon as you're like, well, no, it's actually the food dye. And so we'll just change the food dye. Nope. Damage is done. Everyone thinks they're internally bleeding when they eat our cereal. It's like, okay. All right. Like, you didn't test it and see, oh, this turns your pee red. That might be a little bit unnerving for, you know, said cave dwellers who are buying a cereal. Like,
I wonder if it has any commentary on like the deregulation that was starting in like manufacturing and standards like in America around that time, because they really did loosen up a bunch of the regulations and requirements for stuff, and so that's why we had all these insane 80s products.
Well, that's a completely other thing. Because the regulations, yeah, I'm sure that would catch food dye, but those are much more like for actual health things. You know, like the company itself would be interested in how it's going to be received by its customers, because even if, you know, I'm putting too much energy.
Well, is it also harder to do like PR stuff back then? Because like,
that's what I think. Yeah.
You know, nowadays you throw out a tweet and like your message to whatever the incident was is out there, and people, whether they choose to accept it or not, will at least have access to it. But you know,
I mean, maybe it was, it was all artificial because it was written for a movie and stuff, but I thought it was a clever way to have him out of the picture. And instead of just being like, I've got to go away on business, having this angle of this Saturday morning cartoon serial, maybe this is Stephen King, like seeing his own kids interacting with this piece of like 1980s culture and being a little bit shocked by it and how artificial everything is. And then we get the, you know, we had this sort of like, I think you mentioned in the Lost Boys episode, Luke, that the 80s was such a relevant decade, but it was all like sugar and Coca-Cola mm-hmm. and blue jeans and whatever. And so like then it like starts to change again in the 90s.
I think this whole like plot point of this movie is a great example of what modern movies do way better than old movies, which is or good modern movies do as opposed to acclaimed old ones as well, is that were this to be remade in 2023, the reason Vic would be gone would be way more intelligent than this movie had it be. Like, honestly, Vic is gone because of like three throwaway lines about, oh my god, they hate us now because of this. It's like,
yeah.
And it's just, it beggars belief. It's like, it's just too absurd for a thinking person to swallow in a narrative. So like a modern movie, and modern movies do this way better, is like they would have there'd be a very intricate, well-referenced reason why Vic would be gone. And it wouldn't be right. something as like totally bland and objectionable as we are going to get fired from our promotional job because we are surprised by the main function of the product we're selling.
Right. Like in nowadays movie, he would find out that she was cheating on him and then decide to go into the shimmer a day early, you know, instead of.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. One day early into the shimmer.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, to wrap up the Vic thing, I remain surprised that he was such a good dad. And I'll segue into something that really, really did offend me, I guess, in this movie. And I'd love to get your opinion because we all have the same work experience. But just the sign-out procedure at Tad's day camp to happen in this movie.
Yeah.
So for context, Vic shows up to pick up Tad from day camp. It looks like Tad is sitting all alone at a craft table while the other kids are off at a playground. Not another adult in sight. And Vic is just like, do you want to go home, buddy? And Tad's like, yeah. And so they just leave.
Tough ratio.
This was 1983, right? Didn't they do things differently back then? I wouldn't know. I wasn't alive.
Yeah. No, none of us were alive.
Oh, really? Okay.
85 is when I was born. It's -2. But just like working in daycare and working in summer camp programs, and just the amount of fucking like safeguards in place to make sure the kids go home with the right people is just like, this wasn't happening in the 80s. This is insane. It's insane.
All right. Real question. How many IDs have you checked in your time working camps?
I would check the first week when there was like people I didn't recognize. But once you recognize them, it's fine.
A lot.
I checked a total of 0 IDs.
Alex. Yeah. Maybe you're just letting kids go home with Vicks? I mean,
I would have heard about it.
You would have heard about it. It would have come out. It would have fallen out. And I get that the whole someone stealing a kid from a day camp is like not lower. The chances are they're going to know him. But there was a couple people that were on like do not show up lists when I was working there. Like, if this person comes to pick up their kid, like, absolutely no way. If they leave with the kid, you need to call the cops. But that was
that's different because you know ahead of time who that person is, right?
Unless you've never met them. I mean, you'd have a suspicion if they show up and you don't know them and you know that this is on file. I bet you if there was a, here's what I'll say in your defense, Alex. I bet you if there was a kid with a court order against one of their parents from picking them up, and that a parent who fits the description of that court order shows up, or an adult who fits the description of that court order shows up, you're going to ask for an ID.
Just say yes. Just agree.
No. I would have been like, no, sorry, your kid's not here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It reminded me of like when we did training time, they're like, imagine if a parent walked in at any time, what are they going to notice you're doing? How do you make sure you're engaged? And I was just like, if I was a parent, I walked in and saw like one kid at the finger painting table and no other grown-ups, I would have some serious questions about the camp.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just funny. We're all summer camp folks.
I bet Tad was annoying and that's why no one wanted to hang out with him. Always talking about monsters and shit.
Well, the truth is also that maybe a lot of the parents are like Vicks and they actually are thinking way more about their shitty cereal than they are about their kid's finger paint.
It's true. Nope. No problem here.
The real horror was your terrible job and the wife that's cheating on you, right? And the rabid dog.
Although, look at their house on the ocean that they got. Like, fucking, he's making a lot of money from that cereal.
So nice. Yeah, they had 2 cars. One was a convertible. You know, they
have this, like, what's that word? Like a, not Victorian, whatever the era of that kind of colonial building-looking house in Maine. Like, it's just, it's like, holy fuck, cereal pay well or what?
Yeah.
Which makes it even more unbelievable that they don't know what their cereal does to people.
Maybe property is really cheap in Maine. I don't know. I don't know what Maine's like. I've never been. But it's only a 6-hour drive for me.
I don't know what it is, but I can guess the main attraction.
Clowns with balloons. Luke, you mentioned earlier, we talked about Joe Camber, and you said, like, why wouldn't he get his dog rabies tested? Well, because Joe seemed like a pretty shitty dude.
Okay, and then, I mean, this is another thing, right? Like, obviously, Stephen King, he does his shit. People love him for it. But, like, how many times in your stories are you going to have, you know, an alcoholic, abusive parent? Like,
all
I feel like
every single one.
Every single one, right? Like, every time I watch a Stephen King movie, it's just, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. There's nothing new about it, nothing original.
It's the same chords, different song.
I bet you, like, to be charitable to Stephen King, I bet you there were way more adults like that when he was writing those books than there are now.
For sure.
Or at least it was not as stigmatized as it would be now.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, like, more illuminating to have them be characters because you actually see what they're like. Maybe.
No, like, those people still exist nowadays, but it's like...
Yeah, but it's not like... My guess is it's not as cool to be that way now as it might have been, or at least, like...
Not as cool?
Well, that's maybe not the right way to phrase it, but yeah. I know what you're getting at.
I think back in the day, like 60s, 70s, 80s, alcoholic parents, they wouldn't have been called out like they are now.
Yeah, it would be something that you didn't, it was like a big shame and open secret everybody knew, but you mustn't mention it at all. It's like you mustn't refer to it. Yeah. But really cool. Really cool to be an alcoholic parent back then.
Cool with your bros.
Yeah.
No, my point with Joe is not that he was not a shitty person, but I just don't think that correlates with knowing about rabies.
That's true.
Like, one is ethical, one is intellectual, and like, often those are divorced.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My point was completely different. It was just like, have a different trope, Stephen King, you know?
I mean, you don't...
We'll make some money.
I feel like you don't become like a novelist who writes hundreds and hundreds of stories without reusing tropes again and again. And like, I get like that, like, parent negligent adult is something we talk about in Stephen King books all the time. And I don't know. I guess it didn't outrage me.
To get empathetic about a story, and I think one of the reasons that Stephen King has had such a hold on the zeitgeist in almost the entire time he's been writing, is that there would have been a lot of people reading the books who related to the horror of having an abusive parent or an alcoholic member of their family at some level. So,
yeah,
I just think it was more of a thing people related to than maybe, hopefully, less people do now. You know?
Yeah, maybe that's a sign of like hope with like the changing of things and I don't know who is currently the like next Stephen King in terms of writing horror, but I wonder if that trope has evaporated some way. Well, but also we saw The Black Phone. There's an alcoholic dad in that one. So
yeah,
like, I wonder if that has evaporated.
But that was also set in the 70s.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. That's yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm saying, if somebody's like, time to write my new horror novel set in 2022, the scariest thing is, I don't know, my parents are on screen time too much, or my mom is addicted to Facebook memes with minions, you know, being pro Trump. Like that's the next thing. So
yeah,
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how it changes.
No, the current bad parent would be one who idles outside in their car.
Oh yeah,
versus turns it off even when it's cold.
Yeah. Yeah, idle free, baby.
Just like the second commandment.
No graven idols.
No
graven. Is that what the second?
Yeah. Thou shalt have no idols before me. So God is kind of the OG environmentalist.
Yeah. Don't leave your engine running while you're talking to God. He's like, hey, no idols before me. I get it. I get what you're doing. You're doing wordplay. That's pretty sneaky, Luke.
Thank you.
Yeah. What are we talking about? Joe Camber. Now that we're talking about it and you're pointing out all the like very convenient things, it's very convenient that his wife is like, I need to get away for a bit. Well, I won the lottery. Okay, time to go. Like,
goodbye.
Now she's gone. It felt like they did a lot of groundwork to have the people be away from this farm to set up this like Cujo being here. The neighbor's dead. Joe Camber gets killed by Cujo, and then there's a shot at the mail office where the mailman is like about to deliver all the packages, and the guy's like, "Oh, Harry, no mail to the Camber place for another week," and he's like, "Ah, save me a trip. I don't have to go all the way out there." You're like, ah, snatched away. All this salvation. Robbed.
Well, and the reason that that family goes out to Joe in the first place is that mailman who's just at that garage is like, oh, I know this other guy. He'll be fair. And he's really good. It's like, well, you have fucking terrible taste in people, man. He's obviously not fair and a huge asshole.
He's maybe a good mechanic. We don't know the veracity of that. We never got to see his mechanicking skills in person, but
all I can say is I hope that mailman lives with a lot of guilt, because really this is all his fault.
It's all his fault. Yeah. Okay, but what about the actual attack on the car? Like that whole scene, was that like tense and scary at all? Because for me, I found it to be quite engaging, even though it was like very loud and very screamy for a lot of it.
Yeah, it was good. And then it became the rest of the movie. Do you know what I mean? I think we talk about like how we use the expression, we get it movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we get it. They're trapped in a car. There's a rabid dog outside of it. You don't have to show it for literally the rest of the movie.
Yeah, because this movie was, what, like 100 minutes long? And it seemed like a good 40 of them was like the car and Cujo, which I was not prepared for it to be that long. You're right.
That's what she said.
I will say what I was very impressed with about this movie is just the amount of training.
Oh, yes.
That they probably had to do with all those St. Bernards.
Yes.
I was pretty impressed with that.
They were good. There was five different St. Bernards, and they were all trained to do
certain
things. No, there was like one that was trained to like run to a mark. There was one that was trained to bark on command. One was trained to like jump up on people and lunge forward. And so they're all. And then there was also this article I read from Screen Rant said that there was some scenes where there was like more contact with people. It was a man in a St. Bernard suit. So maybe that explains some of the fast edits and cuts, because you don't want to see like a very obvious fake dog. Just to protect.
Well, you know what they say? You can only teach a rabid dog one trick.
Yeah, that's true. And then there was like some puppet work. I think the scene where Cujo bites the handle of the door handle off the car. That's like a man with a puppet. Like dog mouth. And there was also, for they didn't end up using it on screen because they were able to train the dogs. Apparently St. Bernards are really hard to train, but there was thought of getting a black lab and dressing it as a St. Bernard. So putting a St. Bernard costume on a Labrador Retriever, because they are much easier to train. So
my main emotion during all of that was actually disgust. I thought that was like a really gross part of the movie, between all of the shit all over Cujo and then just all the dirt and muck that got on the car and in the car. I was this
so
movie's
gross.
Surprisingly disgusting.
Yeah. every close-up shot of Cujo with the saliva and the pus from the eyes is just like, ugh, so gross.
So gross.
So gross.
But I wanted to be more entertained by the climax of this movie than I was, even at the beginning, because like Cujo can just ram this car and break the window and suffer nothing. And then the few moments where it is like a battle between Donna and Cujo, Donna just wins. Like she's just stronger than Cujo, pushes him off. So it's like, oh, okay, you can like basically headbutt a sheet metal and be fine.
And dent it, yeah.
And not handle like a flesh and blood type of... It's like, it was just...
Yeah.
Again, that just movie shit that outrages your sense of the world is frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was some times when she was fighting off Cujo where I was like, well, when Cujo did the same move on Joe Camber, who is much taller and much broader and has more weight and
muscle
behind him.
1 second, he's dead.
He's done, he's gone. You know, Joe's friend, same situation. As a funny aside, the intuitive thought process behind that man of taking his garbage out and then pouring it onto a pile on his front step is...
I think that's an old person thing, though, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
like,
probably he burns it.
Oh, probably.
My guess. But yeah.
My friend's grandma does that, apparently. Just puts her shit on the porch. It's like, grandma, really?
In Korea, the garbage pickup is done by, like, volunteers. So, you put your bag of garbage out on the street, and it just gets cleaned up by volunteers.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know where it goes, but...
Is it volunteers or people that actually work?
Well, I think it's actually like elderly people who, after they've retired, and it's just, you know, like they have a lot
something
of
something to do.
They have a lot of volunteer programs for the elderly in Korea. Mm.
Sure, that's great, and good programs to keep you feeling useful? Contributing and generative in your old age, because it's a huge part of like elder care is like not feeling like you're useless, and that keeps you going, keeps you at better health. Smart.
I believe when they walk together, they refer to it as the elder strolls.
Ugh. Skyrim chat.
Well, it's a Skyrim volunteer, not a Skyrim job.
No, the reason I paused was so I didn't make that joke, and then you went there.
Oh, sorry. You can edit that out.
No, I can't edit this. This is all live. What's up, listeners?
Right.
The first jump scare, though, in when Cujo does attack the car, I thought was very scary and very affecting, because she pulls up, gets out, and you kind of expect Cujo to come through the driver's side where she's barking, and he like lunges through the window on the passenger side.
No, that was so predictable, though, because he was like, my seatbelt won't come undone.
It was predictable, but it still scared me. It still startled me, because Cujo was big, and
how about the scene where the car is working, and she takes enough time to stop and say, fuck you, to the dog, instead of just drive away?
Never take time to say fuck you to a dog. See what you get? Fuck you, dog.
You know, I know I overuse this analogy, but it's if the body fits, somebody just drew an outline on the ground for this movie to lie in, and the movie just lied in it. Lay in it. It's like,
roll over.
How many times have we seen in a movie the hero, you know, it's a joke in The Incredibles. You caught me monologuing. You know, like, just shit
you
like
sly
that.
Dog.
It's just too stupid. It's too stupid to be in a thing for other people.
Were either of you surprised at the extra layer of peril they put on where Tad like was having breathing problems towards the very end of it?
Oh my god. Tad's one of those people, it's like, the world fucking revolves around me, you know? I have every single fucking problem, and you need to deal with it right now, or we're gonna die to a rabid dog. I know that's a very specific example, but that's what Tad was to me. And you know, I mean, I'll give him a pass because he's a child, but like, some people out there are not children.
I found it a tad much.
Good one.
Great.
Do you think, okay, question, is Tad short for a longer name, or is Tad the, like, I don't actually know.
Tadward.
Tadward.
I think it was short for Tadpole, wasn't it?
Yeah, they call him Tadpole. Well, and Tatters.
Tadless?
You know what? We're going to ask Jeeves. Is Tad short for something? English baby name meaning Tad is an abbreviation of Thaddeus, who is one of Christ's 12 apostles. I can see that.
I guess that, yeah. But Thaddeus, then why not go by Thad?
Tad? I don't know.
I think there was a Thad in the show Blue Mountain State. I think there was a Thad in that show.
Yeah. So there you go. Maybe his full name was Thaddeus.
Thaddeus.
Yeah. Yeah. It was short for Thaddeus, Luke. It's obvious.
Sorry for not taking your questions about this movie more seriously, Billy.
That's okay. It's a shortened version of Tad with an HG on the end of it, which I guess is a pronunciation that I don't know. Thaddeus or Thomas. So, I mean, it's like, why is Betty short for Elizabeth? Why is Peggy short for Margaret? Like, it's just, who knows, the way these names
change. Well, I mean,
I
can, at least Betty, like, there's a B-E-T in Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And Peggy, Margaret, yeah, there's no P in Margaret. I don't know. I guess there's like a G. There's a G and an E.
Sure.
Peg, Margaret, Margpet.
Margpet.
This language makes no goddamn sense.
That's because it's a fucking English mutt. Speaking of dogs,
yeah,
English. I would, you know, and I'm no expert on linguistics, but part of English's success is its stupidness.
Yes,
because it's very adaptable and it can absorb other words from other languages in a way that more purist languages won't.
So. You can do anything with English. Verbing words, weirds language.
Exactly.
That's a little Calvin and Hobbes for you. Okay, so the end of this movie, like the very end of this movie, where Donna has managed to, you know, get a gun. She's managed to get inside the house, takes care of Cujo. The lack of resolution to this plot line is insane to me, because the movie literally ends with Vic and her hugging and saying, like, oh, we're alive.
That's the Rocky 3 ending, right? Is it Rocky 3 or Rocky 2?
Would you believe I haven't seen any Rocky movies?
No. Yes. I mean, yes. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yes. No, yes. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how. I know one of the Rockies ends on a freeze frame. That's very, it's in pop culture, but I don't know. Just that I was like, wait, what? That's where the movie ends? They're still stranded out there. She has been bitten by a rabid dog, so she has also got rabies, assuming. Pretty sure. Tad is definitely not out of the woods if he's not breathing regularly. Just because he got a little bit of water and his dad's back, like, he's definitely needs to go to a doctor. So I just thought it was, you know, we talk about the pacing of this movie. Too much time spent in the car being attacked by Cujo, and not enough, like, what happened after? Did they go to the doctor? Did they work out their stuff? Like, Steve, the, like, guy she's sleeping with, breaks in, slashes up the house for some reason, and then they're just like, yeah, we got him. He said he did it. Okay, I guess we're done. So it's just very, it felt very fast at the end.
I mean, all I can say is that this movie was not committed to logic, so I don't think it abandoned its principles with the ending.
Fair enough.
Bad endings to movies are worse in movies that set it up like it needs to have a good ending.
It's very poetic. You know?
There's a deeper psychological point. I think humans are more outraged by hypocrisy than they are by, like, kind of straight down the middle evil or badness all the way through. I think there's something that gets our hackles up more about hypocrisy than just terribleness.
Right.
So, but that's a different point.
That's a different point. there's other literature that explores that, I'm sure.
Yes.
And not Cujo, the rabid dog movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought this movie was very sad, and it has stuck with me. So I don't really know what else to say, but have either of you got any final thoughts on Cujo? Anything else that I didn't bring up or that you remember that through our conversation?
Not really.
No.
Not really, and no from both of them. Okay, then let's find a scariest part of the movie. And for me, I think just the reality of rabies. Maybe I don't know when the rabies vaccine was invented or when the shot was developed, but it feels like rabies is not as scary as it maybe once was before a cure, not a cure, but like a shot was available, because rabies is one of those diseases that's still 100% fatal if you don't get treatment. Like,
mm-hmm.
You just don't survive it. And so I think that's very scary. And just seeing this dog who is, I felt bad for Cujo the whole time. I was like, he doesn't mean it. Oh, there's no such thing as a bad dog. There's just bad dog owners. And Joe Camber was a bad dog owner. So that's my scariest point. The horror of rabies. Take care of your pets, everyone. Luke, what's your scariest part?
I don't know. I just think the grossest part was Cujo's face.
Yeah.
To me, that was the most visceral I felt, was his face.
So neither Alex or I have dogs. You have a dog, Ranger.
Yes.
It wasn't at all like, now that you're back out more in the country, like, are you worried at all about rabies or anything? Like,
doesn't he have his rabies shot though, Tex?
I don't know if Ranger does or not, but yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing where if it happens, like if you get bit by an animal, you just gotta go to the hospital and get a shot.
Well, I mean, we have that now, which is great, but I guess maybe 40 years ago, it wasn't as easy or common knowledge. Plus, maybe in the States, a rabies shot is like $7,000. You know, who knows?
Mm. Yeah, who knows?
Scariest part, Alex Wan?
My scariest part of the movie was probably when... Huh. Okay, I got one. The real horror was Gary. No. Yeah. Well,
Steve.
Yeah, when Gary died. That was pretty scary.
Oh, Gary, the Joe's friend?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's like, they have that scene early on where he's like, where Gary says to Joe, he's like, that dog wouldn't attack you if, or wouldn't attack me if I came at him with two straight razors in my hands. Because,
yes,
like, we're setting up that Cujo's the nicest dog in the world. And then, oh boy, he gets real fucked up.
More subtle foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Very subtle. Very subtle. Hey, this dog will not attack me. Wink. Narrator voice. He was wrong.
He was wrong. Yeah, that was the scariest part of the movie.
Good scariest part. All right, then. Let me rate this thing, and we can get on with our days. For me, we didn't talk about this at all, but after Donna and Steve hooked up the first time we see it on screen, Steve just has a trombone beside him, and he plays a couple notes, I guess, as a post-coital trombone. So we're going to rate this out of post-bone trombones.
Post-trombones.
Post-bone trombones. And yeah, I think this one's going to be in the high threes for me. I think a 3.9 out of 5. Not quite a 4-star, sex trombone film, but 3.9 out of 5. It kept my interest. I was very sad. It made me feel things. And that's what movies ought to do, I think. So 3.9 out of 5. Post-bone trombones. Alex, why don't you rate next?
Nothing wrong with this movie, but it was just like another Stephen King adaptation. So I was a little bit bored. Fair. Nothing of it really interested me that much, even though it was, you know, very rooted in reality, I guess you could say. So I'll give it 2 post-trombone bones.
Post-trombone
out
bones?
Out of 5.
Mm. All right. Luke?
Yeah, I mean, this movie, the content of this movie was fine, but all of the kind of extracurricular movie tropes just were too obvious. Mm-hmm. So it's no way to distinguish this movie really from any other. So I'm going to give it 1.5 trombone bones out of 5.
Nice. I wonder if that's like, obviously we are a victim of having 150 plus movies under our belt, so we can see the tropes. But I also wonder if in 1983, the tropes weren't established. And so it's more revolutionary to do it then. But we, you know, we Maybe. Can't control what time we saw this movie. So it's fair. It's a fair rating from all of us. Well, then, let's go into our something to cheer section this week. I am cheering. This is going to be weeks after by the time this episode comes out. But tomorrow, at the time of recording, is my last day of semester. And it's been a tough one. Woo. So I'm at the end. I've got a presentation to do and a paper to submit. And I'm ready to not be stressed like all day long. I've had insomnia this semester. I've had acne flare-ups and breakouts.
COVID?
And I'm just like,
and COVID?
Ugh. And COVID. I'm just fucking, fuck you, semester. Let's try again in fall.
At least it wasn't rabies, right?
At least it wasn't rabies. Although I did get bit by a dog on my run yesterday. No. Mm. I'm fine. It was a werewolf. It's fine. So yeah, I'm cheering the end of the semester. 2 years down. 1 to go. Let's do it. Luke? You're cheering what?
Speaking of tropes, I'm going to do another trivia cheer because last Sunday was probably the most euphoric I've ever been at trivia because we have a nemesis, the Hammerschlagens, and after 60 questions, we were tied even again. Mm. 2 weeks in a row, we've been tied. And the first week, we lost the tiebreaker because it was like a throwing a ball closest to a hole. But this time it was a
perfect
question.
Trivia.
This time it was a question, and it was like a closest two, and we got the number exactly right. And so
oh, hell
we
yeah.
won in overtime, and I was
sudden death.
I was euphoric. So
what I'm was sure the question?
Victory.
Yeah, what was the question?
Like one of the Super Bowls, the 49ers defeated the Denver Broncos by the largest margin of victory ever in a Super Bowl. What was the score difference?
Oh, okay.
And it was 45, and I kind of knew it, so we guessed 45. So our closest two was the, in fact, exact right number, and we only had 10 seconds, so that was fun, too.
Dang. Well done. Well done. Big wins.
That's
Big
right.
wins for the Sexapod.
That's right.
All right. Alex, what are you cheering?
My roof's done, I guess. That's
Yay!
A cheer. Yeah.
Nice.
Huge so cheer. It's been Huge 4 cheer. Months.
Well, I'm glad that your roof is done. Your new bedroom/office looks great. We'll see where you're recording from next time. Bonus cheer. Congrats on your wedding, Joel. I know this comes out a little bit after that, Woo. But
congrats.
Who could forget Luke's amazing speeches? See, now you gotta really knock it out of the park, buddy. All right. well, if you are listening, we love you, listeners. Thank you very much. So next week, we're going to be continuing on with Phobias Month. Alex Wan, mm-hmm. Do you want to hear the list again, or are you
good? No, I got
you're
it.
Good.
I
you're
figured.
Good. What are we going? What phobia are we doing, and what movie?
We are going to do agoraphobia, and we're going to watch Copycat, 1995.
Copycat, 1995. Ooh, I have not heard of this one.
Nice.
Copycat, 1995. Who's in it? What do we got? We
can see Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, dang. All right.
And Holly Hunt.
Awesome. Okay, well, tune in next week as we talk about Copycat. Thanks for listening. Luke, say goodbye.
Say goodbye.
That's not how that joke works, but good job. Alex, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Goodbye from me. And remember, they're just movies. There's nothing to fear. Thanks so much for listening to Nothing to Fear. We hope you enjoyed the show. And if you like what you heard, we'd love it if you left us a rating or a review wherever you got this podcast. Ratings and reviews are the simplest way to help our podcast grow and have people find out about us. You can also tell your friends about us. That would really help. Show them an episode. See if they like it. You can follow us on social media. The only game in town these days is Instagram. That's at Nothing to Fear Podcast. And if you have a little bit of money in your budget and you'd like to splash that around, you can go to patreon.com/nothingtofear and support us there. We have some content that goes up sporadically. We're all busy, but any amount helps. And you can get through the doors for as little as $1 a month. You can also listen to what the other two members of Nothing to Fear are up to. Luke does his podcasts, Really True Fiction and Liberal Soul. You can find those wherever you found this one. He also does his radio show, Full Spectrum Cinema, which I keep bugging him to make a podcast. So maybe one day he will. Otherwise, you can tune in to Kootenai Co-op Radio. Just Google it. Alex, of course, is world-renowned for his One Song a Day playlist on Instagram. On Instagram, go to One Song a Day. Check out what he's doing. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.